You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Because he's booked and blessed and very busy. He is very busy. All right, so before I bring him on, I would like to start by saying, back in the day, I used to think it was a dream come true bowing next to him on Broadway. That every night that I got to do that, I never took that for granted. And now, today, having him on my show, my podcast, is so full circle, and it feels like truly an honor. Okay, so just a rundown of some of the things that he's done. Of course, yeah, he's toured with Rent, Dreamgirls, Book of Mormon. He did Book of Mormon on Broadway. He was also the original Broadway cast of Beautiful, the Carol, what show did we do? Beautiful, the Carole King musical. But here's the thing. He is the reason why I took the swing position that I have today and Once Upon a One More Time. Because he left Beautiful and he came back as a swing. And I might be embellishing this story a little bit. We can get the facts straight in just a minute. But he came back as a swing. And while he's backstage, he's writing. He's writing his butt off. An actor coming back as a swing, writing his butt off. And more or less, he basically wrote a Broadway musical while he's chilling backstage. I have never been more inspired. It might be possible that it's always been cool to be a swing, but this person is the reason why I think it's cool to be a swing. So in addition to his acting credits, he has set the record for being the youngest playwright on Broadway, and he's Black. He has written for off-Broadway, television, and one of his most recent victories, he's written Broadway's Chicken and Biscuits starring Norm Lewis. Please help me welcome my friend, the incomparable Douglas Lyons.
Thank you, Salisha. Okay, wait, we got a fact check real quick before we start, because you said some things that are not true.
Oh, man. What is it?
No, okay. I am not the youngest writer on Broadway. We had the youngest African-American director in Broadway history, Jalen Levingston, on Chicken and Biscuits. So that was the youngest. And then okay. I was never a swing in Beautiful. I only came back to replace my original track. But I did swing at Mormon on Broadway and left to go do the First National tour, and I swung Rent at 19. So swings represent, like, love being a love to the swings. Like, I mean, it's a hard job. It's a very hard job, you know. Swinging is very hard. But I just want to fact check that, cuz I am not the youngest writer and I never swung Beautiful. I tried sometimes, but they would only bring me back to my track, which I'm grateful for. Wait, but it felt crazy. Like I was a swing because of my track. I had a 45-minute break. And so you would see me in the hallway. I remember you always walking by. and I was writing in the hallway. But I was in the show. I was never Swain.
You would think that I would remember that because we were there together. You see, this pandemic did something to the mind, honey. I'm a little old lady, honey. So it's possible I'll go back and redo that. But also, I'm still like, I'm so excited to talk to you. Thank you for taking the time to come on here and just to share a few words. I really look up to you. I think you're thebomb.com.
Oh, thank you.
How are you today?
I'm good. So I'm in this new voyage as an artist, right? Like, I spent over a decade acting, tours, regional, Broadway, very blessed in that regard. And somewhere along the way, I started writing for healing in 2013, musically. And I met Ethan Pachar, my musical writing partner. And then in 2017, backstage at Beautiful, I started writing my first sort of book of a musical. And then I wrote Chicken and Biscuits, basically backstage at Beautiful as well. And so it's opened up this new journey of like, you know, I worked on Fraggle Rock last year in the staff room. We wrote a song for Fraggle Rock. Chicken and Biscuits is being passed around Hollywood, and I'm meeting with really big, you know, companies and working with a celebrity on my pilot right now. It's just like life has changed as I knew it pre-pandemic, and I'm having to adjust to this new life, this new way of living, this not having to show up and do 8 shows a week and having time to like invest in myself and to have readings and to show up for other people. I came to DC. I just saw you in DC because I came to see
Once Upon a Thanks One More Time.
You know what I mean? Like, I have more time to live life as a result of this new path, but it's also very lonely. Lots of solemn time, you know, because it's just me and my computer. So I'm in transition now. Yeah.
What would you say you like better? Is there a like better?
I think I want a taste of both. As you know, with this new variant, Omicron, like, our profession is in disarray right now. But I've done 8 shows a week for 8.5 out of 10 years. I did 8 shows a week from Dreamgirls to Mormon, to Mormon First National to Beautiful. And I had some regional gigs between. So my ankles and my knees are tired. Like, it's real, you know, it's real. I don't think people realize it's a commitment of the body and the mind and of the self. You are giving your temple over to this profession, and you are there 6 days a week, and you are missing weddings and graduations and moments in life, birthdays. And like, I was in a relationship and it had to work around the schedule. We were on opposite schedules, you know? And so I don't miss that. I miss the community. I miss coming in the dressing room.
Yeah.
And there being 8 people, some of which I don't want to see a deal with, some of which I love very much, and laughing, feeling like crummy at the beginning of the show and feeling so elated by the end of the show and like leaving the building on high. I don't get that camaraderie anymore the way I would love it. But like today, I have a table read of my new project with a bunch of actors that I've worked with. And like, I get it in community, but it's just different. It's not in the room. It's not there every day. So, and also the money is different when you in the Hollywood. It's a little different,
Oh my goodness. I can only friggin' imagine. I feel like you are a dream. Like, your path is a dream. And I know you mentioned loneliness, and that is a, like, there's always going to be some freaking, like, what do they call it? The shit sandwich? Like, you pick your dream job and there's always going to be something even about your dream job. But how has it been for you, this transition? Like, I picked up my favorite magazine, a bougie magazine, and your face was in it. What in the world? Like, how do you go? How is it going from a few people, a nice little amount of a few people knowing who you are, to a lot of people knowing who you are? How is this transition going for you?
Well,
you walk different, feel different.
I walk different because I know there are people that look up to me. There are young Black artists who feel inspired by what I'm doing. So I know I'm not serving, I know I'm not serving just myself. I know that everything I write will employ queer people, Black women, Black folks, folks of color in general. And that is a larger thing to me. So I've had to embrace this new path because it has a purpose behind it. And the purpose is not just me. So you may open the magazine and see my face there, but I know I'm there because ultimately I'm serving my community with my work. And so I have had to get used to that because, you know, having a publicist and 4 lawyers and 3 agents and a manager and 2 acting managers, it's just like, it's a lot. It's a lot. But it takes a team. It really takes a team to like get it out there and get the work done. So I'm embracing it. And I, you know, in the spiritual realm, I'm like, this was purpose. I didn't expect this, but it's happening. So I have to embrace it. It was what, I guess it's what I'm called to do. So I have to do it. I got to show up for it. Right. It's not something I asked for. And I definitely was not a writer. When I started Beautiful, I wasn't a writer. Kidding me?
But
I tried.
Okay, wait, hold on then. Because this could not have come out of nowhere. When you went into acting, did you have a writing bug? Did it just like, did somebody inspire you to write a piece one day? Or were you always writing for your own personal use? Where did it come from?
My heart was broken in 2012. And my parents coincidentally got me a guitar that I like still can't play. I can't play any instruments. Just a waste. But I can write melody and people tell me I have a good ear and lyric or whatever. So I started writing some songs like Noodling, and then I left the Broadway company and went on the first national tour, and that's where I met Ethan. And he was the guitarist on the tour, and I was like, can you give me lessons, man? He was like, sure. Never learned anything. And I was like, you just play, I'll sing. And that's when I started writing music. So that was the introduction to writing. And then 2017, Beau, our musical, our actor musician piece, it was like, I had a book writer and then I like fired him. I didn't fire him. I let him go. Creative differences. Because I realized that we wanted to tell 2 different stories. And I was like, I'm just going to try it. I don't like wanting to do everything, but let me try it. And I like tried 5 pages and then it was up to 10, 15. And then I had like a reading in front of a group of people and Ethan came because he wasn't on board yet. He was like, let me see. And he was like, afterwards, he's like, man, it's good. It's good. You should keep going. And that's when Beau started. And then because Polka Dots happened before that, which we, you know, I co-wrote with Melvin and Greg. And then that led to Peter Pan. And then there was Beau. 5 Points was first, but I was just doing music for that. Music and lyric with Ethan. So, yeah, I like
it seems
organically.
Like you were born to be a writer. This sounds like.
Allegedly so, I guess. Wasn't the plan.
It just seems like. I feel like down the line. Give it like a few years, people will be like, wait. Douglas Lyons started as an actor? Like when you hear Maya Angelou, I don't think Broadway actress. I think the poet. Like,
yeah.
Performed. That feels like that could be.
I don't know. I mean, some people only know me as a writer. Like folks in Hollywood that I'm meeting and these generals and stuff, they only know me as a writer.
Which is crazy because you've done a lot of theater. It's not like you just did like one little thing.
Yeah. No, it was the foundation that taught me what good storytelling was. It taught me what community was. It taught me the business of the show business portion, which I don't think as actors we really think about, which is part of the reason I started writing. It's because I was like, these box office grosses and who gets paid what? When I heard the breakdown of that, I was like, Let me try this. Let me try to figure this out.
You mean the actors are at the bottom of the totem pole?
Now listen. Like, they're at the bottom of the totem pole, but the risk in theater specifically is really high. So only 1 of 5 projects actually recoup. So that's another part of the conversation we don't have, which is, yes, the actors are paid, you know, around $2,000 on Broadway, not everywhere. But the risk of those investors, which sometimes is $15 to $20 million, they don't make that back. So you get your Broadway credit and your show and on your resume and that money, and they're hoping that it becomes a regional success if it was not a success on Broadway. So that's the other side that we don't often talk about, but the risk is heavy, which is why this pandemic is so dangerous, because, you know, closing down for one show because of COVID is $125,000 lost to the producers.
Give or take based on what theater, what house they're in.
Yes. Yeah.
Wow. And we're in a time when there are so many scares. I think Mrs. Doubtfire said they have 19 confirmed cases. 19!
Jesus.
19, Douglas. Jesus. The And Too Proud tour went from having one case to six to now they have the next 2 weeks off.
I know.
This
I know, but it's crazy, but I think because we are vaccinated and I just got boosted, like, what's great about it is that we're not dying. People are not dying from it.
Correct.
So that
Correct.
Is the little like sunshine.
Silver lining.
Yeah, the silver lining I'm looking at is that.
It's like, it feels like it's still scary, but it's not like at the beginning of 2020 where it's like, are we
yeah.
gonna live?
Yeah, are Correct. We gonna live? Yes.
We're gonna cut for a short ad break.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSMusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Okay, so I would like to ask you about catching a wave, catching momentum, because you, I guess you could say that you've done this a few times, but I feel like the last time you did it in a very big way, and I guess everything is relative, but when you catch a wave of momentum and then you ride the wave and then you see something fully manifested right before your eyes, I feel like there's something to be said about that. How, for Chicken and Biscuits specifically, it seemed like, and you can correct me, that happened so freaking fast. How did you get your show on the Great White Way? some people take 7, 8, 9, 10 plus years.
Well, I write really quickly. I make it a priority in my schedule and in my life. So the first readings of Chicken and Biscuits, the very first one was November of 2018. It was written in 2018. We had three readings in 2019 at the Billie Holiday Theater, the Frank Silvera Workshop, the Queens Theater, and then E. Clayton Cornelius, Pamela Ross, and Leah Michaelis did the fourth reading. And then we had the world premiere at the Queens Theater, which was March of 2020, which was shut down quickly after opening night because of COVID. At the end of 2019, I slid into the DMs of a Broadway producer, Hunter Arnold. He's the lead producer of Hadestown, and he had followed me on Instagram. And I was like, oh, he's a Broadway producer. Maybe he reads new scripts. And I sent him a message. I said, hey, man, I don't know you from Hole in the Wall, but you followed me. Would you read some new work? And he said, sure. And for the next 5 months, for every 3 weeks, I would send him a message. Have you read? Have you read? Have you read? He's like, I'm sorry. I'm busy. I don't hold back. Okay. When I want something and I believe in something, I'm going to go for it. And he kept going, nope, I haven't. I'm sorry. And during the pandemic, when everybody was home doing nothing, he finally read. And so it was like April, wow. Like late March, early April, I got a 5-part message that was like, I should have read your stuff. I apologize. I made a bunch of excuses and I want to have a conversation and how I can support you. And so for the next year, we were talking about projects and possibilities and things. And there was one project we were going to do that didn't pan out because of timing and COVID. And then we ended up shooting a film of Bo. I believe I can talk about this now. I can't. Let's say we can. One of the projects, Bo, we shot actually like a live capture this past summer. And because of his relationship with the theater owner at Circle in the Square, because he also did Once in This Island, there was an opportunity to possibly come in because American Buffalo was pushing back to 2022. So people didn't know this, but like at the end of April, I was walking through Circle in the Square. I had just got my booster and we were seeing if we think we could transform the space kind of on top of their set into our production. And then there was like, we had to go through the unions and all this other stuff. And it was a lot of like, maybe this could happen. Maybe this might not. And I kept being like, it's not going to happen. It's not going to Broadway. It's not happening. And then we got the theater because they liked the script and, you know, it became Lego blocks of like, this could happen. This might happen. This could happen. And then on June 24th, when it was really announced and it was like on deadline, I was like, well, I guess this is really happening. But that came from sliding in the DMs of a Broadway producer. So that's why I think it's important as artists for us to believe in our work, make sure it's cooked and ready, but be unafraid to expose and share your work because nobody is looking for you. Like you starting your own podcast, I'm really excited for you because you are taking the universe into your own hands and making a mark, you know? That's what we do.
I mean, thank you. I feel like if I wasn't a swing right now in this moment in time, I probably would have put this on the back burner. And I'm very busy. I'm probably more busy right now than I would be if I was focusing on. But in my mind, I feel like I have more time. And so I'm like, well, I know somebody who has utilized their time. Maybe this is possible for me too. So I definitely feel you on that front. And thank you. So what's your favorite thing about Chicken and Biscuits, about the process of mounting it, of whether it was casting or sitting in on rehearsals or
I think what gives me what gives me goosebumps, which I just got right now, is finding people who have been undiscovered, air quotes, they've been working their entire lives for these moments, and pulling them into the fold because their talent deserves it. We had 30 Broadway debuts off and on stage, and New York Theater just put out an article acknowledging one of our actresses as one of the best performances, top 10 performances of the year, right? Wow. Like those moments, like exposing Black talent in a Broadway space in its own authenticity without apology is revolutionary. It's revolutionary. And that really makes me excited. It's like Tonys and reviews. Yeah, all that stuff. That's the hoopla. But I'm talking about the impact. The impact is showcasing these wonderfully beautiful, talented newcomers in work that makes them shine and boost them off into a new career that they might not have had if they could not be in that space. And so I want to do that time and time again. Like my pilot today is going to have a TV exec on it, but all of the actors are theater people. So like they at least get that exposure of, you know, this exec gets to see them on the material, whether they do it or not in this moment, I'm using my work to expose them. That is what really did it for Chicken and Biscuits for me.
I love that you're saying that, like, as somebody who wants to start like my own empire, like I'm like building, starting small. It's like, it's easy to be like, okay, who's the best? All right. I want this person. Like who does everybody know? Who has followers, whatever. But what you're telling me is, there are people who are the bomb who haven't been discovered, and your friends can be some of those people that you know or know of. It's like, bring them in, give them a chance.
Well, that's what a movement is about, right? If we always go to the celebrities of our art form, and I understand the need to sell, which is why we had a Norm Lewis and a Michael Urie, because they're recognizable names, but we surrounded them with a company of actors that are more than capable. And like, we all got our shot. I got my shot at 19 years old with Rent as a swing, right? I got my shot with Mormon as a swing. In that final callback, there were two other friends who between the two of them had 7 Broadway shows. I had 0. And I got the job. right? So if we get into a place of power, if I'm in a place of power now and I have the ability to pull in 9 actors today and go, you don't know these people, but they're really talented, to this TV exec, that is my responsibility, right? So my glory is not coming from my own like space. I want to use the space to bring people in. And that's the powerful thing. That's why I really like writing. It's like every show, every new piece is an opportunity to showcase someone who really deserves it. And people are like, oh, that was good. I'm like, I know it was. It didn't have to be a celebrity. You know what I mean?
Right. Okay. Yeah. What about being a Black man in the space that you inhabit a lot of spaces, being an actor, being a writer, like just having more and more positions of power, but I guess in particular, actually you can speak on however you want to on this question. How do you feel about representing others in the spaces that you inhabit as a Black man?
In the pandemic, I've learned, I don't represent all. I mean, I never did, but I specifically like to say this. I don't represent all. There are some Black people that don't like me, that don't like my work, and that's totally fine. And I'm not responsible for their representation. I can only be responsible for my queer Black church experience, okay? And my upbringing. And so as long as I'm being authentic to myself in every space I go in and I'm not switch hitting or changing, I'm proud of what I'm doing because I know why I'm out here. And you may not see it from the outside, but I know from the inside why I'm doing what I'm doing. And so I don't know. I actually, the more authentic I became, the more work came to me.
Whoa.
Period.
I think you might have answered my next question, which is, like, I see you posting things and you're very open, you're very transparent, and like you share your opinion, you share how you feel about certain things. And I feel like that can be a scary thing. It can evoke emotions in others and you don't know how people will react. And so are you ever afraid of backlash? How do you have the confidence to be so authentically yourself?
So now with this new path, there is a responsibility that everything I say publicly on a form does not only reflect me, it reflects my writing partner, my producer, right? So I am always aware, like when I type something or play something online, it has to be very intentional. And I have to be willing to be prepared for flack, right? So sometimes I'll do private stories, sometimes I will speak out of my mouth so people can hear my intention. The issue with text online on social media is people don't know the context. And so that they can take it out of context and then you can be in a trick bag. So I make sure that I'm intentional with everything I post. But also there's a freedom about it. When you are authentic and out loud about where you are, you're not holding on to those feelings. You're not bitter with those feelings. There's a freedom that you give yourself when you are true to yourself. And so I hold true to that. And life is too short. I mean, COVID has taught us that we can be taken away that way, like that quick. So do you want yesterday to be affecting you still today because you weren't able to speak up and really tell people how you feel? Because that can also kill you, you know, holding on to things.
We'll be right back right after the break.
Okay, round 2. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Okay, round 2. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
Chumba.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Have you always been this confident? Have you always been a confident? I see you as so... I mean, and you have to understand, like, how I met you. I was, like, making my Broadway debut. I get to meet OBC! Like, wow, this is so cool! Like, you're the senior in college. I'm the freshman trying to get into the program. Like, and so, to me, you've always just been, like, this confident star.
I'm sure of who I am, but I'm still discovering who I am. And what I've learned about these new spaces I'm navigating, if you don't show up in your authenticity, in your power, you will be stepped on. That's something I learned on my first Broadway show, where people were not always the kindest. And so I had to be prepared that there were going to be moments where everyone wasn't going to like you, and for no reason at all. Because there's this quote that Bell Hooks has, and I'm going to rephrase it, but it's like, basically, people see something in you that you can't see, and they see the potential of it, and they don't want it to bloom. So they're going to be nasty to you. And so I think in the past 5 years, I've gone from being like, to being like, oh, it's because you have this thing, this purpose, and I'm going to stand on that. And now you can try to knock me off, but I know it's with a purpose. It's not for me. It's with a purpose. And so that's what I go through. But also, I can't walk into these spaces, you know, and be like, I'm pitching you a TV show that you're going to pay me, you know, a bunch of money to develop and be insecure. I can't be that way. I have to carry a presence so that people can trust me.
Okay, hold up. That's a quotable. I have to carry this presence so that people can trust me. You know, that is so real. There are people that you meet and you know before they even open their mouth to audition, they've either got it or they don't. It's a presence.
It's an energy. Like, when I'm casting stuff, I'm not just looking for talent. It's like, what is this energy? Is that person funny or quirky? Am I going to want to spend 5, you know, weeks in a room with them? Do they seem cold? Do they laugh? Are they too perfect, right? Are they a human? So your presence, I teach a confidence class, and it's as much about your presence as it is about what you bring in the room.
You teach a confidence class? Where can I sign up?
It's so stupid. It's so stupid. Yeah, but like that, I've learned to be confident in what I know. I don't know everything, okay? But what I do know, I've worked very hard for over a decade in this profession to learn. And like when working on my first TV show, I was like, I don't know how to write a TV script, but I'm gonna figure it out real quick. And I did, you know, I had to study it. And now I have the confidence of like, okay, I at least know what it's supposed to look like and let's go for it. You know what I mean? So you have to carry your confidence because it's too competitive. Nobody's waiting for you. And we can smell the fear. People can smell the insecurity and the fear.
Whew. You know, I'm asking you all these questions and, you know, it's for the podcast, whatever, but it's really, you really doing a number on me right now. All these things. I'm like, Felicia, don't think about the next question. I need you to take notes on what he just said. You need to implement that yesterday. So, how do you feel about when you're mounting a show and like in the room when casting is happening about, this is not a trick question, about hair when you're casting actors and actresses? Do you ever look at their hair?
No. I mean, sometimes hair can be an expression of self. So yes. Like if the actor is coming in with their hair a specific way, it's probably because they're representing themselves. And sometimes that might inform the character or connect with the character, but I'm never like judging on it.
Like I first of all, can I say that I loved Chicken and Biscuits? I'm not sure if I said that yet. I felt like it was very implied, but I loved that show. I was howling. I was screaming. It was, I wanted to cry. I wanted to laugh. It's so good. And I think I heard you say something about this somewhere, and I wanted to talk about hair, but hold on. Let me just gag about CMB for a second. I love how it was a celebration, even though it's revolving around a funeral. I was laughing most of the time in that theater. And I've also noticed that your audience was very diverse. Okay.
You bring the story, the people will show up, the audiences will change. That's the other thing about the purpose I'm talking about is I seek to change what our audiences look like in the American theater with my work. I don't necessarily care if it's, you know, embraced by the system necessarily, but if I have brought in a new audience, we are expanding what theater can do. And sometimes I think on Broadway specifically, we are so commercialized. We care about the ticket price and not who's consuming the food. We don't care about the people. We care about how much money they can give us. Right. And I'd rather tell stories on smaller stages if I'm engaging the people I'm actually writing for.
Huh. I find that so interesting. I remember, and I'm like, should I say the name? Should I not say the name? When we were in Beautiful, I'm not sure if you were in it at that time. You might have been. There was a show on Broadway that had some things to do with Black people. And they offered all of the Black people in Beautiful tickets. Only the Black people free tickets. And I was like, hey, Elena, you going to this show? She was like, I was like, wait a minute. Then we got to the show and realized the whole audience was white except for the Black people with free tickets.
And that to me is a problem. That to me is a problem. And I've learned about advocacy in the past year and what I want that version, my version of advocacy to look like, right? Because I think everyone some people deal with business affairs. Some people are in rooms. Like, I want the work to change the audience. Like, that is my version of advocacy. And it's a hard challenge because if people don't care about what the people look like and they just want the money, your work is less appeasing to them. Or desirable, right? But I'm so grateful for this moment because my mind has been blown open with what I want to accomplish in my lifetime with this thing and in this thing and in this system that we've been a part of for a long time and we love so much, but it's still systemic. There are still issues within the system that, you know, just because you're getting your paycheck does not mean you're not within a white supremacist system. Yeah. And how do we acknowledge that and work alongside people, but also try to affect change?
Wow.
Yeah. That's the tricky thing.
So many bombs on my heart.
It's tricky.
Okay. Okay. So I originally brought up Chicken and Biscuits again because on stage, there were all different hairstyles, and I just loved that. I loved there were braids. So, curls. Was there some straight hair on there too?
There was a cut bang and like a pulled. Nakia Mathis did the wig design. I think she's doing Black No More as well. Epic. And what y'all didn't see in the presentation, the first day presentation, she gave dramaturgical research as to why each style was going to be what it was. That Simone was very pulled, so she had this tight bun. Yeah, that Beverly was free, right? Or that Brianna was free. And so she had, like, she specifically went through dramaturgically why each. You should have her on your show if you have not. You have to.
What's her name?
Nakia Mathis.
Oh, yes.
Name. Yeah, I'll make that connection because she specifies her work. It wasn't just, okay, we're going to do this, 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 this. It was the reason we're doing this is because it is representing the personality of the character.
Oh, I'm so, this is so exciting. I love all of this. Okay, wait. So Douglas, I'm about to let you go because guess what? I have rehearsal today. Nobody else does, just me. Two other people. So I'm going to have to go soon. We're opening tonight for Once Upon a One More Time.
Yes.
And so I'm just like, I'm so happy to get to talk to you and honored that you'd spend time with little old me. Just waiting for my agent to say, Douglas Lyons is calling you in. Would you like to go? Just waiting for my big break. I may die if I hold my breath.
You've read one of my new plays. You read Invisible.
I know. I loved it. I think I read both.
You did? See? I be calling you.
I know. Just making sure you still remember me, honey. Get my hand up. what are you most excited about? If there's anything that you've already shared a few things that like are coming up.
I'm excited to take this mindset into TV film. Like that, I want to bloom into that world. Because like A Chicken and Biscuits, when you create a series that people latch on to, you can continue to affect change in your narrative. And so I have a new pilot that got picked up for development at a pretty reputable company. And
you're like,
I'm hoping we sell that in the new year. So TV is the goal, I think, for 2022, while the theater figures itself out. And I can still do both. That's the other thing as a writer. I can be anywhere. If I'm not in a theater production, I can be working on multiple things. So, yeah, the goal is some TV film writing and maybe some TV film acting as that comes as well.
I see all of that and more for you. God is all, he's just opening up doors for you, Douglas. You haven't even scratched the surface.
Oh, thank you.
You are still a baby and you know so much. Can you imagine when you're 85? Oh my freaking goodness. I cannot wait until you are honored at the Kennedy Center next
Oh my God.
Whoever. Oh yes, all of this into existence because you deserve it. And I'm so happy for you. How Thank can you people love. Find you?
I am Chocolate Hipster on Instagram and Douglas Sings on Twitter.
Okay, baby. And with that, thank you for listening. I'll see you next week, baby.
And that wraps another episode of Black Hair in the Big League. Y'all, I'm so honored to have such great guests on this show. And if there's somebody who you want to listen to, please drop me a note on my Instagram at Salisha Thomas or at Black Hair Podcast and slip into those DMs and let me know what you want to hear, who you want to hear from. If you haven't already, please subscribe to this podcast, rate it, leave a review, tell a friend, follow us on Patreon at Black Hair in the Big Leagues. Y'all, I am so grateful that you are part of this community. It would not be the same without you. Shout out to Wilton Music for producing my theme song, Love COD. Shout out to Colin Tabor for editing this episode and most of these episodes. And shout out to you for listening. Y'all, my heart is so big and I feel so grateful. Thank you for listening to Black Hair in the Big Leagues. I'm your host, Salisha Thomas. See you next week.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.